Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio, creating waves of awareness over the airwaves, via the internet, and by friends telling friends they care. Working in unity to promote homeopathy around the globe. Every Thursday, join us for a personal tour of Vaccinations and Your Rights in the U.S., a show co-hosted by HWC founder and homeopath Debbie Brock and attorney at law Alan Phillips. We invite you to comment and call in to contribute your thoughts and questions. Let's go!
I'm Debbie Brock, founder of Homeopathy World Community. Today I'm going to be speaking with a special co-host, our regular first of the month, attorney at law, Greg Glazer, who is with us today from California. And he is a constitutional lawyer from, and maybe you'll help me pronounce, Copperopolis. It sounds kind of like Superman, California. He is also the founder of the Civil Action Network, an independent media organization offering coordinated citizens' referenda to promote justice, liberty, and sustainable living. You can visit his website at www.civilactionnetwork.org. And I'm always pleased to be speaking with him and his knowledge. It does sound a little bit like the beginning of Superman. Justice, liberty, and what does he say at the beginning of the show? Oh, maybe he can't hear me. Is Greg on the line? Hello.
Well, can you hear me, Debbie? This is Alan.
Hi, Alan. I think that Greg kind of dropped off the network. I'm going to see if he can call in again. And what we're going to be learning today is he's got a brand new website called CAN, C-A-N, about this constitutional law. Oh, here he is. I think I see him now.
No scholar?
Okay, yeah. I think okay. You lost your, yeah, you're back on with us, and that's great. So we're going to be learning, I introduced you, and we're going to be learning more about your brand new website, CAN, and it's the Civil Action Network.
Great.
And you're going to kind of fill us in on kind of how it got started. And
yes. I'd be happy to. Thanks, Debbie, for the introduction as well. Yes, so Civil Action Network is an independent media organization that I started with the help of some friends back in 2009. And it started out as a premise where we were going to develop a show called Simulated Trials. It was like going to be a mock court cases against these giant behind-the-scenes powers, you know, the ones who run the central banks and are involved in all sorts of secret society cabals and whatnot. And it turned out to be a very difficult project because to get a mock trial going, you need an exorbitant amount of funds just to film and produce one show. It'd be about $1 million per show. It's kind of like making a movie. And so lacking the funds, we decided to do a different approach. And so the approach that we've come up with is a referenda approach where you can go onto our website, which is civilactionnetwork.org, and submit your own ideas, submit your own proposed laws for how you would like to change the system. And the idea behind this approach is it's kind of like wiki-style referenda. And what that means is that anyone can post their own idea. It's like an open-source forum or, you know, a really public forum. And you know that principle where, or that phenomenon where if you get enough people guessing at the number of marbles in a jar, you actually get a pretty decent answer? Well, it sort of follows that same premise where you get enough people voting on ideas that are presented by the public, I'll bet you we can come up with a better answer than Congress. And so
That's pretty
well guaranteed,
isn't it?
I think it's a neat idea. Or started the Marvel.
Would the general public have the insight and the information that Congress receives? I mean,
No, I think what we'll find is that the public is actually quite ill-informed, and it'll be very interesting. But I think you'll also find there's going to be some standout people, just as it's always been. Some people who are not corrupted by the system, and you know, I'd like to see the ideas of Alan Phillips on our site. People like Lou Rockwell and Alex Jones would be good. G. Edward Griffin would be classic. So I think, you know, on the balance, you may find that only 1 out of 100 people have, you know, ideas that could actually function, you know, in a complex republic or society, whether it's a republic or, you know, straight democracy or what have you, most likely a republic, really. And I think that process of guessing at marbles, that process of voting and allowing the people to take charge, is an expression of a philosophy, a theory, which is that we've already tried the premise where you give all your power to Congress and let them work it all out. You know, they decide the highway bills, they decide, you know, the details of the EPA regulations. What we found is that they run with that power. But if we go back to this principle, this philosophy of personal responsibility, where we're all going to be responsible for the decisions that we make and we're all going to pay attention, then it makes people more accountable and invested in the system. And I think we found that that was feasible or practical in a republic where you didn't have as many laws. It was more direct. And, you know, a person who doesn't fly a plane will never have to interact with the aviation code, for example. But or aviation regulations, which is nice, you know. But all the same, even for the things that we do interact with on a regular basis, I think what we're finding, amazingly, or not amazingly, is that all of us are criminals. Every one of us. We probably each commit 3 felonies a day. There's even a book about it. And the reason why, the reason why is because there's so many conflicting and omnibus laws that you don't even know what you're breaking.
Oh.
And so. Yeah, so I'd like
don't
to return.
Don't get out of bed that day.
Yeah, that's right.
But it's
reminds
it
me of that book I read as a child, where it's How to Be Perfect, and at the end of the book, you find that he's just sitting in a room quietly with his hands folded, drinking tea.
The answer is don't do anything.
Well, right.
but we're taking risks every day, and what it sounds like you're. Concept is something from the bottom up rather than the top down, where you're giving this pinnacle, these elite people, responsibility to take care of whatever is happening amongst the people, whereas you're kind of switching, turning the tables and saying, okay, you guys, you're the ones living this. What needs to be done based on your actual experience?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. I feel that the common man is more in touch with the reality of our world than the elites or the self-proclaimed elites, you know, and the politicians and the industrialists, you know, running major industries. I feel that the common man opposes genetic engineering, for example. I feel the common man opposes these massive nuclear installations. And if it was decided upon by the people, we would have a more sensible policy on the balance. I think theoretically it would take us a very long time to get there, to get to a place of sustainability through citizens' referendum. But I do think that it's a goal that at the very least can add great balance to the process. And in fact, it's something that we're kind of already doing anyway, because. What Civil Action Network is doing, what my media organization is doing, is we are, in a sense, we're collecting votes, but really we're more like polling the people and saying, give us your ideas, let's have everyone vote on it, or, you know, it's kind of like a poll, because, you know, if the people on CAN vote on your idea, it doesn't automatically become law, obviously. It's an informal voting, so it's like a poll. And the mainstream news already does that. They already do polls to get you know, a sense of whether people will support a measure or not. But I think that with a truly grassroots polling system like this, that focuses people on the issues of our day, you can get a better grasp. And so we don't just do the poll, we don't just do the referenda. If you go on to civilactionnetwork.org, you find that our whole site is this wiki style reporting, or wiki comes from Wikipedia. It's this idea that you know, anyone can go on and post their perspective or their research, and Wikipedia, unfortunately, is sort of centrally controlled. Ours is more distributed, but or even centrally controlled by me. But oh well.
I have two questions there, coming off of what you just said. One is, does the media ever look at the Civil Action Network site so that they see what kind of questions and answers are coming up with your polls and how people feel? That's kind of one question. And then the other question would be relating to the direction or the results of these polls being composed of people who are only active rather than a more broader representation?
Right. I think that's a great question. And the answer, it would be that it's a goal we hope to get toward. I think you'd find a greater cross representation of the public using Facebook.
Uh-huh.
You know? And
right.
That's what we're finding. Like, for example, Iceland is in the process of amending their constitution. And they are using... Basically, they're using YouTube and Facebook to solicit ideas from the public, and you know, to the extent that the elected representatives of Iceland, you know, incorporate those suggestions, you know, is sort of to be determined. But it's I think it's telling of the times that we live in that these representatives recognize the importance of public feedback to even the fundamental process of constitutional amendment. And you know, our constitution, which was written a very long time ago, of course, in the 18th century, late 18th century, it was written by just a handful of men, and it was in a closed room. The shades were drawn. As a CNN reporter, Fareed Zakaria reported that the flush toilet hadn't been invented yet. it was a very different time, and so today we have this great knowledge base. But at the same sense, we're inundated with news, and I think it's a great fallacy that the public is very informed. I actually feel quite the opposite. I mean, just compare the news that you read. For example, if you're living in the European Union. The news that you'll see that's reported about America is quite different than the news that you'll read in America about America. And that's from just the European Union. I mean, if you go to like a third world country, you'll find it's even greater. So there's this disparity. I don't think we realize just how underinformed we are unless we are, I mean, really inundating ourselves in the news. And so that goes right back to that original point that we were discussing, which was, you know, how much can we trust the public to come up with these sensible rules? And I think that we'll find it's going to be the scholars of the day who end up writing the rules, which build public support. But I think the public support will still be there because people want to vote. They want to participate and make a difference. And so I think it'll be very interesting. And one of the features that we have on Civil Action Network is that in addition to posting your own idea, your own referendum for law, you can also post news articles, or if you want to just post like a one paragraph statement about what you think is a sustainable action in our world. You know, you want to share your positivity. We allow you to do that as well. Like I posted a little paragraph about organic family dinners. I think it's helpful, you know, to sit down with your family, have an organic meal and talk.
Right. There's a couple of things off of that. Number one, what you're telling us is social networking is an absolute, you know, you have to be on there doing it today, especially if they're going to gather information from these polls and ask for people to put up YouTube's t- telling their opinions. So people are going to have to be part of this social networking communications. It does change the world, actually, to it has in numerous cases of political events. But there are a lot of people who still don't have it, don't have access, or are afraid of it, or want to keep their privacy, so they don't do it. Right? And then it's really nice to share your positivity. But what happens when the news is actually censored, for instance, coming in from China or the Middle East? A lot of the internet is being censored, even our own. I often get a link from somebody who lives in the European Union, and when I go to watch that news article, it says, this is not available in your country.
Yeah.
So
right.
What does that tell us?
Yeah, it tells us that laws are in place to control the flow of information on the internet, which emphasizes to me the point that I was making, that the people would change these rules if they had the opportunity to do so, and that people would be focusing on different aspects of the, you know, the quote-unquote new world order if they felt, you know, more comfortable doing that, and better informed. I think that there's a certain realm of new world order research that will focus on, you know, conspiracy theory, and then different would be like conspiracy evidence and
on your network there will be areas that with these themes and issues of conspiracy theory and evidence.
Right, and mm-hmm. I think that you know, on the balance, we'll find that the different presentation of perspectives itself adds value. That's part of the democratic process. That, you know, I want my you know, we want your grandpa to post about his worldview as much as we want, you know, the 20-year-old radical to post their worldview. Because in the exchange of ideas, I think often find we'll take a middle of the road approach that we're all comfortable with. Because we share ideals, which is that, you know, you wanna raise a healthy family and take care of your kids, and you know, you wanna eat good food and have access to quality health care. It's basic. Mm-hmm. You know, we want justice, and these ideals transcend our modern political parties. I mean, they don't just mildly transcend; they vastly transcend. They completely predate them and exclude them even. So I could have so much more common ground with a communist than I could with for example, someone who's attending the Bilderberg meetings and engaging in a campaign, like a genocidal campaign, who would call himself a capitalist. Even though I myself am very much capitalist. And so I feel that through this process of exchanging ideas and voting, it's a way for us to engage one another in a positive forum. And so that's why the Civil Action Network is entitled Civil First. I mean, that's our thing. This is all about peace. We're not interested at all in any form of
revolutionary
violent anarchy.
You
know, Hitler, that was a revolution. It was. Revolution is one of the most dangerous words in the world, because mm-hmm. it's this idea that, you know, we have to take it down. You know, I feel that all the tools for peace and prosperity and caring in the world already exist. They're already in our hands. This idea of media and political power, it's an absolute fiction. It would disappear overnight as long as we just focused on fundamental value. Even money itself, it's a paper fiction. It's electronic entry fiction, but it rules so much, it's so consistently, and it's this premise that you're not focusing on the fundamental value. And so I think that by redirecting the whole debate, by asking different questions, we can start the process, the very long road of getting to a more sustainable solution. And again, I always present this as a theoretical, because that's how I see it. You know, I don't see the world moving in this direction. I think this is a great idea. I'm glad we're doing it. But I see people munching down cheeseburgers at McDonald's.
Yeah.
You know, I see them lining up at Target to get their toxic goods. And I don't see it changing by next Christmas.
Oh, I just put up a cute little video all about that. I'll have to send it to you if you didn't see it. But Here, you know, you're talking about media and political power and changing the fundamental values of. I ask you, the people who are in power, how will they relinquish it, even if the people are speaking, you know, loudly on the internet and communicating amongst each other? What is going to make the people who are at the top give away their power? I mean, that's, I don't see that happening. I don't know.
Yeah, I think the answer is that when the people respond with their vote, then it will be an amazing test and challenge to those in power. And what our history shows is that the rulers do respond to voting and public pressure. But the thing is that they always hijack it. So, like,
yeah.
You know, the most classic example and the most powerful example perhaps in all of human history was when Constantine became a Christian. It was this, he's like, oh, okay, everyone's Christian? All right, I'm going to hijack this now. Now I'm a Christian and everyone has to be a Christian and this is how we're going to do this. And
that's becoming a what's the czar? You know, like you're forcing other people now to do something that's loss of freedom.
Right. Yeah. You know, gosh, you know, there's so many wonderful quotes out there by philosophers who, and Debbie, you of course are among them, a philosopher, which is that those who come with benevolent intentions are often some of the most dangerous people of all. You know, Hitler completely talked about this great utopia that he was going to create, you know, and how he was promoting these wonderful ideals, you know, of freedom, you know, and a great standard of living for all Germans, you know. But we look at the actions on the ground. You know, philosophy by itself is often dead. Because words could be completely manipulated, just as anything can be manipulated. I think I've said this before on our program, that even water can be used to torture. So it's about how we use these tools on the ground. I mean, right now, these wars that the military-industrial complex is waging are based on, as they claim, you know, democracy and spreading the ideals of liberty and fair tribunals or justice, if you like. And but of course, you know, those who do the independent research and find, you know, what's actually going on is complete fallacy. It's utter hypocrisy. What we're doing is a new form of colonialism, of imperialism, where we get to rule from the central commands of Washington D.C. and London. And this is the new colonial. The old colonialism was where the countries would go in and they'd actually inhabit, like Britain would go and put their flag in India, and they would colonize that country, or in Africa, they'd go, like the French, they'd go, and the British, they'd go in there, and they would, you know, occupy these people, they'd do slave trades. Today, it's different. It's a military-based approach, and we use corporate power to gain access to the resources of these people, and then, you know, to hell with their liberties and their way of life. You know, we just go in there. It's not. These are not my wars, and strip them of their livelihood, which is primarily based on these actual things. You know, and this is where it gets beyond philosophy. We're talking about what's actually going on the ground. They're literally taking away their fields and their homes, and they're literally putting in new dictatorships, just changing governments to strip them of their rights and change the system and then putting in new contracts in place among these corporations to, you know, secure this for the long haul. And it's some of the and it's organizations that you've heard of, Coca-Cola, Nestle, Chevron. You know, I mean, these are major world players for the new colonialism. And this is so well documented in the independent media. I mean, just go to Global Research, get a bag of coffee, and you will be a different person in 3 days. You know, if you keep an open mind.
Okay,
that's globalresearch.ca.
Okay, globalresearch.ca. C-A?
Yeah.
Okay.
So, two of the best authors, I think, in Western civilization are alive today, and
mm-hmm.
they are Michael Trotsky and William Engdahl, and they're covering these issues exactly.
Okay. So today, basically, for the first half hour of our show, which is typically called Vaccinations and Your Rights in the United States, we wanted to introduce the Civil Action Network, this independent media organization, which basically what you've explained to us is offering citizens a referenda, a place where they can vocalize their own thoughts about justice, liberty, and sustainable living, about how to make the world better, how to make communities and countries better, and to hopefully, I think that your goal is for the mainstream media to take a look at it also and respond or get more attention of people to come to your network so that there can be open communication without hiding behind walls or being censored or being funneled into certain areas, that people can have a huge exchange of ideas, which what you say will kind of, like an open source technology, will end up in a commonality somehow and innovative ideas for making the world better. And I did want to give you that opportunity. We kind of touched on a lot of different things that people will find on your network. So do you want to give in the last couple of minutes of this section of the show just about like the tabs where people can refer and what they'll find there?
Yes. Yeah. And thank you. I think you described Civil Action Network well. On the homepage, you'll find an introduction to what we are presenting to you for your consideration. And it's going to be news. We want you to read some news articles and video, if you're inclined, watching.
Yeah, I started to watch the videos. They're pretty good.
Yeah, yeah. And then we also present the referendum. When it's plural, it's referenda. When it's an individual law, it's referendum. And then we have book recommendations, if you're so inclined. And then at the very bottom of the page, we have some fun things. It's quotes, pictures, and little paragraphs or sentences about things that you can do today to try to make a difference for sustainable living in your own life. And then as you go through the site, you find that, and you set up an account with CAN. It's free. It's private. And you can participate. You can add the very content that you see on the site. And you can make your own proposed referendum. You can write your own proposed law. Or if you have a position paper, like a philosophy you want to present, like it's not a proposed law, but it's like an idea for law, we call that position papers. And you can write your own position papers, just like, you know, an essay on a topic that you feel passionate about. Or go to our community page where you can post an event. Let's say you're having a peace rally or, you know, like a peace organic dinner or something like that, and it's in your community. We have a calendar, like a community calendar, and you can post that and then share it. And all of this has sharing features. Share it on Facebook or Twitter or whatever.
Okay.
And then,
so it's like social media. So that's really awesome. I'm very, very thrilled and proud to be part of your ventures and let the public know that this is something that they can participate in. We're just about ready to start our regular section today.
Great.
About vaccinations and your rights. And all the while that we've been talking amongst ourselves, there has been an open chat for people to log on. If they're on Twitter, if they're on Facebook, or wherever they are, they can click and log right into Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio, because we do have a number of different shows that we have during the week, and they're in the process of being restructured. But still, you can listen to our archives and get the downloads at your convenience. So we're going to have Alan, who has been waiting in behind the curtain there. He's ready to walk on stage and get us started. So I want to just introduce him for those people who are not familiar with our show. Alan Phillips, attorney at law in Chapel Hill, North Carolina, is one of the nation's leading vaccine rights attorneys. He does advise individuals, families, attorneys, groups, and other organizations throughout the United States on vaccine exemption and waiver rights. And he supports legislative initiatives aimed at expanding vaccine freedom of choice. This is the first month, the first week of the month, the first Thursday. And Greg, you're going to be kind of guiding us through Codex. And we're going to have Alan jump in with questions as he usually does and his valuable information and insights. So why don't you just get started with defining what is the Codex, and we'll go from there.
Sure. Codex Alimentarius may be the most dangerous thing in your life. It is Latin for food code. That's what Codex Alimentarius means. And the reason it's so dangerous is because it is, and it doesn't have to be, but it is in practice. It's an international program, which is like an international bureaucracy, and it's staffed by unelected officials, and they are setting these rules, and the rules apply worldwide, and the rules are for the consumption and production of goods, mostly food and vitamins and things relating to what we ingest. And so what Codex Alimentarius I'll just start with the beginning, I suppose. It was created in 1963, and it was created by this two international organizations that are under the United Nations. One is called the Food and Agriculture Organization. The other is the World Health Organization. And for those who've done research on these organizations, they know that they are incredibly subversive, beholden to giant industry like the military and pharmaceutical industry. It was created in 1963, and with absolutely valiant goals. You know, I mean, but just by reading the introduction and the preamble or constitution, if you like, to these programs, it sounds very benevolent and nice. And if it were used properly to promote natural and organic living and food choices, it could vastly improve the world and the environment. But it does not do that. It does not accomplish its goal because it is, for the exact reasons I mentioned, it's staffed by these unelected people who are beholden to these major industries. Their goal, as it's stated, is to achieve food security for all and to make sure people have regular access to enough high-quality food to lead active, healthy lives. And
how did it get staffed by these unelected officials? Can those officials not be changed?
Yeah, that's a great question. It's actually a mandate within one of the Codex regulations that one of its governing documents, that the delegates, they're called delegates, it's kind of like an employee of the program, has to be an employee of a national government. So, for example, the United States of America has one delegate at Codex. And that is Dr. Yetley, and she works for the Food and Drug Administration, the FDA. And so if we wanted to have a person from, like, let's say Greenpeace be there, then they would have to be there as an approved NGO, non-governmental organization. And so you have to apply for status as an NGO to Codex. They get to voice their opinion, but they don't get to vote.
Who gets to vote?
Only countries. Because only countries are members of the program. It's kind of like being a stockholder. You know, like if you go to a stockholder meeting, you can vote because you're a stockholder, and you get to even though there you get to vote according to your shares, but here you get to vote it.
So I'm asking you is those people who are voting are making these rules and regulations, how do we change those people?
You'd have to change your FDA. Yeah, you'd have to change your national government. And the way that our, research what are the regulatory authorities within the American government, I think what we find is that they are quite commonly, if not almost entirely, just beholden to these corporate interests. It's sometimes it's called the revolving door problem, and this is written about even by people who are within the mainstream, like even Robert Kennedy Jr., you know, who's quite mainstream liberal, writes about this revolving door problem, where the industries who are being regulated, they make these massive donations to politicians, and the politicians appoint these authorities to be, or they appoint these corporate employees to now be regulators within the system. And that's what we found with the FDA. It works.
We also see a lot of people. In the federal agencies being hired after they or leaving the agencies to take jobs with industry, where we presume they would be getting a substantial pay increase, or they wouldn't be making the move. But just the fact that somebody can go directly from agency to industry means that their position in an agency, and this would apply to federal agencies and probably also the World Health Organization or UN agencies, there's a blatant conflict of interest there. Whether or not they are in fact able to be objective, just the mere position of being a policy decision maker who has the opportunity to go get a great paying job in industry means that as a matter of definition, there's a conflict of interest there, and they shouldn't, and their judgment is going to necessarily be skewed or clouded to one degree or another, and maybe not in every single decision or every single instance, but it's just sort of inevitable.
I'm not so worried about the conflict of interest as long as they made the right decisions. like for example, if you had a naturopathic practitioner, you know, who is working for the WHO, they would be probably quite biased toward holistic remedies. And I feel that that bias, might actually hinder their objectivity, but at least it would allow freedom of choice.
The problem is with the conflict, there's no way – when there's a conflict of interest present, there's no way to know whether or not their decision is objective. I mean, we can all have our opinion about whether or not it's objective, but it's inherently – not objective just by the presence of the conflict of interest. It's sort of interesting, and Greg, I'm sure you can speak to this well, but in law, if there's even, let's say you've got a local court case, if the judge happens to know personally a person on one side of the case, it's not even a question, does the judge get to decide whether or not they can still rule objectively? Just the presence of that relationship, the judge is required or should recuse him or herself because that in that situation you just don't know whether or not there's an influence or how it goes. The judge
can rule
in their favor.
He has the consent of the other party, but.
Right. I mean, there can be exceptions, but I think outside of the legal context, conflicts of interest are dealt with not as high a level of scrutiny, if that'd be the right word.
I think so. I think you're spot on. So this revolving door problem is so prominent at Codex, and what I'd like to see happen at Codex is basically a reversal of its actual policies, but still promoting its mission, because I think it's a great mission. You know, this idea that we're going to be promoting free trade. And promoting free trade in organic goods, I think that would be wonderful. But instead, what they do is they set these rules, and the rules will govern how, like the maximum amount of vitamin C that you can have, or the minimum amount that must be in a capsule, you know. And the reason why this is challenging is because it puts restrictions on manufacturers, especially of vitamins and minerals. For how they can operate their business, so they can't respond to the free market of what people want for their own natural products. And when this is set by unelected bureaucrats, and the rules are incredibly difficult to change as time goes on, you find yourself with a very cumbersome system, and that's what we found. As many vitamin and mineral providers have gone out of business following the implementation of these stringent rules by the FDA.
Well,
so,
I got a question then, if I may, if I could jump in here. What exactly is the legal authority or the degree of legal authority of this as, and if I understood correctly, this is something falling under the UN umbrella. And for example, when I read the international health regulations drafted by the World Health Organization, I see a lot of language of recommendation, but and very strong, forceful recommendation in terms of the language. But I don't really see anything in there that talks in absolute terms of everybody in every country in the world has to do this, that, or the other, which suggests to me, and I think as a starting point, and I don't want to get on a whole separate topic here, as a starting point, the World Health Organization's authority, again, using this as an analogy because we're on a different topic here, but and as my own point of reference, that their authority really involves, for example, with regard to infectious disease and vaccines, they're concerned with international travel, something involving more than one country or travel from country to country and so forth, as opposed to having, at least in any global sweeping way, the authority to tell citizens in individual countries around the world when they are within those countries not engaged in international travel, you know, what vaccines they have to get or not get. And so, but I'm of the impression, and this is not an area code, I'm delighted to have you on today, and as always, but to learn about Codex, because I'm aware of it only generally, and it's not an area that I have a lot of information on, so I'm delighted to pick your brain as much as we have time for today.
Yeah, thanks. I have the answer to that question, which is where Codex gets its authority. And the answer is, it's kind of sinister. It's really based on commerce. This idea that when a nation signs up to be a member of one of these organizations, like the World Health Organization or Food and Agriculture Organization or the World Trade Organization, then they agree to its policies. And the way these policies are enforced is by sanctions, economic sanctions. And so, for example, there was a rule passed in 2001 where, involving a trade dispute where the U.S. was giving a tax break simply by not taxing a foreign corporation on a certain income made from food sales. And the World Trade Organization said, no, you have to tax that because – otherwise, it's like you're subsidizing this food item. And so the U.S. then changed its law. It changed part of the U.S. tax code to harmonize with the Codex rule. And so this was like, you know, a red flag by those of us in the movement promoting health freedom that, look, the U.S. is changing its laws based on these dictates. And I'll even quote to you from the U.S. Federal Register. This is from 1995. The FDA, this is the FDA stating, where a relevant international standard exists or completion is imminent, it will generally be used in preference to a domestic standard. So what they're saying, what the FDA is saying, and what Congress is doing is they're changing U.S. law in accordance with these rules. And if we don't change American law, then we can get sanctioned, get monetary sanctions. And this could be a big deal if you're a debtor nation and, you know, if you owe a lot of debts, because in economic sanctions, they can really mount up, and especially if your creditors decide to call in some of your debt, then you're really in trouble. So,
well, it's a good thing we're not in debt here in the U.S.
Right? Yeah.
Well, let me ask you another quick follow-up on that then, because this is something that's going on at the federal level. And of course, we have a separate state and federal systems here in the U.S., and if so, how and why, are we at the state level bound by what the federal government does, presumably on our behalf, to, you know, agree with some international or other standards?
Yes, the answer is that the Codex committees completely ignore the states, because the standard for participation in the program, the international program, is based on nation status. And so California, obviously not being a nation, it goes completely unrecognized. And the Constitution allows the United States government to set agreements and treaties with foreign powers. And so this would be a classic example where the international law with Trump, even under the Constitution. And the Constitution.
So is this another? Is this a supremacy clause we're talking about here? Where we're talking.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, just okay. And this would fall under. This would be then fall under the treaties reference in that clause. That, in other words, that supersedes any sort of state law conflict, and so in fact, and I'm just clarifying because this is what I thought was probably the case. I was just hoping you'd say, no, here's a loophole. But we at the state, at, you know, as states or at a state level, are bound then by what our federal government does in terms of its alignment with these an international standard.
Yes, and the Constitution even states at the end of the Supremacy Clause, anything in the Constitution or laws of any state to the contrary, notwithstanding. So that is an exception, perhaps, to any treaties, because it's saying notwithstanding. Or you could interpret it as saying notwithstanding, meaning that anything in the Constitution or laws of any state would not be able to trump.
Hello, I've just noticed.
I hate that word, notwithstanding. It's so ambiguous. I should research the case and see how that's been interpreted. But generally, the way that I recall learning this question was that the Constitution does not specify what trumps, whether it's the Constitution itself or the treaty. It's vague. And so there you go.
So there may be some room to argue that, perhaps.
Right. But the only way that it's played out, you know, because, you know, the UN has only been around for so long.
Right.
The only way it's been played out has been with these economic regulations. So, you know, you'll have like a trade dispute, and then an order will come up saying, well, you have to change your rule, and Congress just does it because, you know, we want to be, you know, the U.S. is this sort of, is obviously this major international power and, you know, uses the WTO, probably more than any other nations. And, you know, because it's this idea of, you know, the neocolonialism, the imperialism, you know, we're using these economic sanctions to keep other nations in check and, you know, enforcing their debt. It's such a crime. I hate to use the word crime because it's such a legal conclusion, but it seems like such a crime that these poor farmers and these other nations have to pay their interest to America, you know, America being so rich. And you know, when it goes to America, it's just going to these international rich financiers. And, yeah, it just seems like such a crime. I mean, these people are just starving, you know, trying to make it. And then these rules. I mean, and that's the message that we can't skip. I mean, we can talk about the Supremacy Clause, but what's going on the ground is that these rules are being used to secure the hegemony and the contracts of these corporate interests. And they use these forums, like the World Trade Organization, to issue orders that will bring these governments in line.
Okay, we do have the live chat, and we've got Victor who is giving us a little bit of information. He is saying that the EU will X-ray all vegetables, fruits, and meat transports before they go to the wholesale houses, and that this law is made by Codex A Group. I'm not sure who the Codex A Group is.
Oh, he's referring to Codex.
Oh, okay. Yeah, he just used the abbreviation. All right. So what I'm asking is, well, obviously Victor is stating that there are things that are being done to our foods, our potentially organic or fresh fruits and vegetables, that diminish their nutritional level and may actually be harmful to our health, which in a essence goes against what you say the main idea of this organization is, what was created in 1963, you said. And I guess my question is about integrating your website, the Civil Action Network, because can people make a change in some way? Alan was concerned about the states not being able to have a voice. I mean, our federal government is supposed to represent the people, the people.
Oh yeah,
in
I mean,
every,
even under contract principles, you can negate these treaties. All we do, we just amend the supremacy clause and negate the treaties on the grounds of something like fraudulent inducement or conspiracy. And
so is
the,
it possible?
Oh yes, of course. Yeah, it's so. I mean, we might be able to find some scattered examples throughout ancient history. You know, where people have done this in terms of like you know like greater governments. You know, maybe you can find it in Rome and Greece and something like the British Empire, you know, but yeah, no, I mean, I think what the history shows is that you get conquered if you try to do this. But hey,
mm-hmm.
You got to try. And Victor's question is absolutely on point. He's actually pinpointed the very issue that I think is one of the most important for how food control is going to happen in America. And that is with this central control of food distribution. Because there's a committee on CODEX. And that's what CODEX is. It's like a series of committees. They have about 30 active committees. And they cover different things. Like there's like a grain committee, a fruits and vegetables committee. Then they have a vitamin and mineral committee. And one of the committees is food hygiene. And then they have another committee on labeling. That's really important. That's like for GMOs. We'll get to that later. Remind me, Debbie, that we got to get to labeling.
Labeling?
Okay. Yeah. So food hygiene is what Victor's question is kind of geared toward. It's this idea that CODEX will set a rule on irradiating food. Now, for those who are unfamiliar, irradiated food refers to the process where nuclear technology is used on a factory level scale to cook the life right out of food before it reaches the consumer. So it doesn't just kill E. coli, it kills everything in the food. So by depleting the nutrients, the public becomes more susceptible to disease. And, of course, hypocritically, the practice is defended on the grounds that it kills bacteria and viruses.
Right.
The Organic Consumers Association has all the info you could ever want on this. But so with CODEX, food irradiation, this process, is classified as an additive. And it's regulated by the Committee on Food Additives and Contaminants. And they will work together with the Committee on Food Hygiene to set these rules, which I think this is the next step in America. It's that they're going to set these rules to say that you have to, you know, before we're going to let food go into commerce, it has to go to these central facilities where it gets irradiated or it's centrally controlled, so we can make sure it's safe, so we can protect you, right?
What happens to the local farmers market?
Yeah, I think that is sort of, you know, up for debate or issue, and that's
I mean, if the people of the state want to have local farmers market fresh directly from the farmer, no intermediary, no other delivery system, just, you know, like your lemonade stand as a kid, you have, I mean, this is America. Mm-hmm. Can we not do that?
Yeah, that is an unsettled question. Right now, we have the DSHEA, which is a Dietary Supplements Health Act from 1994. Congress passed it, and it protects our health freedom, and it removes the FDA's arbitrary enforcement powers. Now, this is supposed to protect our rights to vitamins and minerals and, you know, like supplements and stuff. And then inherently, we have this right to grow food and put it into commerce. And I mean, it's been so fundamental that you didn't even need a law saying that you could do it. I mean, of course you could do it. Of course you can grow food, right? And
we should be able to.
Right.
Are you saying they're going to regulate that?
I'm saying that they have already made it their declared intention to do that, and that's exactly what they're doing. Like, I'm sure you've heard about these raids on producers of raw almonds or raw milk. You guys heard about
that? Yeah, I know that we have. I haven't heard about the raids, but I do understand that we don't have the almonds now are all irradiated.
Right.
I mean,
right.
The
FDA is they're identifying a natural product, and they did it with marijuana. They identify a natural product and they deem it dangerous to the public, and then they will use the FDA powers to go in and take the product from local farmers and then set an example. And they publicize this, you know, on their website. They send threatening letters, and it's completely demoralizing. And it's like a Gestapo technique. Gestapo, of course, comes from the Soviet Union. And the premise is that they're exceeding their reasonable authority, and the people are somewhat powerless to do anything about it. And, you know, just talk with someone who's completely indoctrinated about food safety, and you'll find that, you know, they're very much in support of these regulations because, you know, they'll see one story on CNN which says that, you know, rare strain of E. coli comes from organic farm, you know, contaminates, you know, or harms, sends 18 people to the hospital. And then, you know, oh, organic farm must be, you know, must be so dangerous. I mean, compare pharmaceutical medications and surgery, you know, and some of the things that the FDA has approved, most of the things the FDA approves as drugs is the greatest killers of mankind in terms of what you can ingest. And, you know, when you look at the number of people who have died from minerals and supplements, I think the number is zero. Yeah, zero. There's been a research article on that point. And then, you know, just mm-hmm. compare pharmaceutical
meds. Well,
so,
yesterday...
For people who are informed, it's just such an obvious hypocrisy. And, you know, we sort of beat our heads against the wall. Like, how on earth could all these people be so, you know, deceived? Why is this happening? And, but so it is.
I'm really... It boggles my mind because I heard on the radio a commercial for a drug called New Vigil. And it's for people who have off hours of working. They stay awake at night. And supposedly they get excessive sleepiness because they're these shift workers. And when I heard the commercial listing the longer part of it on the radio was about the side effects, including death, including hospitalization, including, you know, so many negative things. I said, how could they approve this? It doesn't make any sense.
Right. Yeah. These
well,
are,
I think all
this,
of this goes
to an organization that's beholden to its corporate paymasters.
Exactly.
Well,
it all goes back
Alan,
to the
what do you have to say?
It all goes back to what Greg just said and was saying earlier, that we have, in effect, a corporate takeover of these federal and international agencies. And whether or not or to what extent that might have been something intended at the outset, because I think it's really terrific of you to point out that Codex's mission, as it's initially stated, seems to be not merely benevolent, but honorable. And yet it seems that what has happened is, in effect, a corporate takeover of that, or worse, that was all up front from the start. But either way, we have special interests dictating things to the detriment of the general public. And, of course, the obvious question there is, as we become aware of this and recognize that problem, what can we do about it? Is there a process or processes within our own political system here or otherwise that we can engage in? Surely there are people informed like yourself who have taken or are taking action. What are sort of our options here of response, and what's the state of that presently?
Right. Yeah. Well, we'd have to have a declaration by Congress that we are withdrawing from the WHO, as well as the WTO and the FAO, and then even then there might be a complaint on the grounds that. it would be a pretty complex legal issue as to how you can unilaterally withdraw, but. Yeah, I mean, it would basically just take a massive public support to say, hey, look, you know, we're not going to be part of this. But in the same sense that we were saying we're not part of this, I think we'd have to propose an alternative solution, which is that, you know, the reason we're not part of this is because we're going to do you better, you know, and we're going to promote, you know, organic, safe food. I don't want to leave this like on too negative, because there actually is quite a bit of progress being made by NGOs through Codex. Like, I actually have an up-to-date report. This you may be surprised to hear this, but I have some breaking news. I just exchanged emails with the president of an NGO who's at Codex meeting right now in Geneva, and he gave me some breaking news that I don't even know if it's hit the news wire yet. This radio program may be the first to hear it, which is that they're considering this livestock poison called ractopamine. They're trying to set a limit on it. And just yesterday, the EU and China and Russia and Turkey and NGOs, they beat back a very strong attempt to impose this poison and other meat in the world. And so it's a sign, and so this fight is going to continue, but, you know, we won for now. I mean, we're, you know, and it's, and that's, you know, I mentioned, I said China and Russia and the EU, they also supported the NGO. So there are people within Codex who are trying to stop the poison and trying to make a difference. But this is it's a complex fight. And we're dealing with people who are, you know, so-called experts and very much bureaucrats who, even though they make, you know, may make a couple smart decisions, you know, in terms of, you know, stopping one poison from entering, you know, the public food system, they will make terrible decisions in other contexts. And it's this great complex bureaucracy that itself can be part of the problem. And I just want to highlight that you will find some positive news coming out of every now and then, and I want to encourage our listeners today to visit the National Health Federation. It's go to thenhf.com, thenhf.com, and you will find a petition that you can sign today, which we're trying to petition the FDA to mandate labeling of genetically modified foods. And the public overwhelmingly believes that GMO food should be labeled. But the United States government feels the opposite, because we have Cargill, you know, we have these giant, we have Monsanto, these giant corporations who are making and pushing genetically modified organisms on not just Americans, but on the world. And if these products are labeled as genetically modified, they will not be as accepted by the public, and that includes the European Union.
Tell us the name of that website again for labeling,
yeah,
to vote for labeling of GMO foods.
That's right. It's thenhf.com, the National Health Federation. And its president is Attorney Scott Tipps, who used to actually be on the U.S. delegation for Codex, but he was kicked off because he was, you know, considered, his interests were considered to be, you know, against those of the United States government. But his interests are to support health freedom. His interests are to support organic living, you know, and your right to choose natural vitamins and minerals that you deem to be in your best interest. And so I encourage people to go there, sign a petition, make a donation to the NHF if you can. And it's interesting. I think there's definitely a battle going on these issues, and you know, how it's going to play out. I think we see trends toward greater control, unfortunately, and greater industrialization of the food supply. And, I mean, we all kind of see that, right? And to be aware of these issues and to try to make a difference, even if it's just a small contribution that you can make, it's going to go someplace. You know, we have to be aware of these issues, because, you know, we can take so much as humans. You know, we're resilient, we have filters, and we can take a lot of oppression, as we found. But when they take away natural food, you know, even if they take away vitamins, you know, you can still kind of get through it with natural food, right? Fruits and vegetables. If they take that away, you know, that's like absolute power over the human's natural right to just be. How can we stand for that? So,
well, how do we tie this in? So basically, the Codex is an organization that was founded on a good principle that has been taken over by bureaucrats who have been influenced or perhaps bought by industry, big industries such as pharma and agricultural control and chemical corporations. So how do we reach these bureaucrats with our desire to see it more for the benefit of the people rather than for the benefit of the monetary gain for these big industries? How do we reach them?
Yeah. You know, we'd be able to reach them through a radical change in United States policy. You know, for example, if Ron Paul was elected president, that would be a huge change in the United States delegation attending Codex, because he would probably just squash the FDA entirely.
I don't know. Is he running again?
Yes.
He is running again? Okay,
he
so...
is. I do
yeah,
have an issue with his
I,
environmental policy, though. He doesn't support a national-based environmental policy.
So, I mean, no matter who you're going to look at as a potential candidate, they're going to have certain issues that you're not going to fall in line with because each of us are a little bit different.
Yeah.
So I guess, so how are we going to enact the policies that are going to be beneficial? I mean, we ourselves don't want to become dictators in any way, but we want to promote freedom for all of the people. So that means being responsible citizens and acting for the higher good. And I'm still in question. I mean, you're talking about a utopian civilization.
Yeah. Yeah, I think in a lot of ways. And, we have, and it goes back to my point that I think we already have all the tools we need for peace and prosperity and sustainable living in the world, but we don't do them because on the aggregate, people are ruled by the monetary system. Every day we need this money to be able to, you know, sustain this standard of living, to be able to even go to Whole Foods or go to your local farmer's market and trade and buy. You know, you're gonna need some cash, and it's hard to make money in this world and under this system, unless you're supporting one of these industries, one of these dangerous industries. And it's really prominent. You know how much it's like our eyes are being rubbed in money every day. You know, it's
mm-hmm.
it's sad. So,
but
you know,
but there are many you're talking about the United States. There are many countries around the world that do have little to nothing,
right.
You know, the people. So
absolutely.
It's always
yeah.
going to be a some sort of a battle between the haves and the have-nots.
Right, yeah, and I think our duty with regard to those people who have very little and who are currently engaged in sustainable farming enterprises is that we have to free them from their debt.
Mm-hmm.
I wrote a
we're already in too much debt. How do we free them when we can't free ourselves?
Oh, I could free us with the stroke of the pen. Yeah, no. Basically, what all the Federal Reserve notes are is their debt. You know, you could all they have to do is just go down the Treasury, just goes down, prints five bills. You know, each worth so many trillion, and says, okay, here you go, Federal Reserve. You're now paid in full. Thank you very much. And secondly, we're now going to implement a state-run banking system, but free banking. There, debt. Death's gone. And then all we have to do is just declare that these people are free of their debt. And we don't just declare that. We apologize greatly for being this imperial power, and then we offer resources to them. I mean, no more of these so-called peacekeeping missions where we're overthrowing their government and putting in our own government and keeping these contracts. Contracts gone, nationalize these industries, break them down, break down the Monsantos, and then start trading in these environmental remediation technologies. Start trading in organic goods and let these people be free and be self-sustainable, and give them the tools for democracy, information sharing. You know, in a lot of countries, you'll find a very illiterate population of farmers. And if given the tools to effect change, you know, they will slowly over time. It may take them another 100 years. But, you know, for them to continue their own, you know, organic and sustainable living production chains, you know, that's a great value to the entire world. And the massive corporations know this today. That's why they go and exploit them. They go and exploit their natural resources. And so if we focus on the value itself, and actually the corporations are doing better than the common man. I actually kind of have it down. If we focus on the value itself, on these actual productive mechanisms, and then look to sustain those, gosh, you know, we could feed the whole world 10 times over. But instead, we have these policies of promoting war. It's because there are these massive interests in resource exploitation. And so, how do you withdraw their power? Well, always derive their power from the from the consent of the people. You know, everyone who lined up on the 4th of July and was waving their little flag, that was like their proxy vote. That was them voting for, let's keep going. All right, everyone, we're on.
But they,
more,
but the people, the
more
people
debt,
don't,
more control.
The people do not have any idea. In that little video that I was describing, it's only 1 minute and 22 seconds, you see a man sitting on his couch watching the television set. It's all in a cartoon form. And from the television screen, you're hearing the blah, 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 blah talking of the White House coming out to the person with two little winged change buttons going to his left and right upper shoulders and saying, change, change. And, you know, this is the mantra. And if they don't really know how to change or what to change or
right.
or even what's going on that they need to change, it's unlikely, or they feel helpless and powerless to make a change. So what happens is the little man is looking. He's sitting there on the couch. In the right hand is a Pepsi or a Coke, and the left hand is a hamburger. And so he's looking at himself. And he's listening to this message coming from the television, which we might call propaganda. And then what does he do? He changes. He takes the Coke from the right hand and puts it in the left hand, and he takes the hamburger and puts it in the right hand.
That
so
is,
now he's made some the only change that he can have within his own control. And
yeah.
So what happens? The two little flying change buttons drop to the ground. So that's the end of the show. So
that's funny.
So here I'm asking, you know, it's very high philosophical thinking, but in actuality, what can the common man do to create this peaceful world that you're imagining?
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm in the process of writing. I wrote a new constitution for America, a new environmental code, new tax code, new civil code that I'm just finishing up right now. And I posted it on CAN. Go to CAN and please vote on it if you like it. And I think that's what the common man can do. We're also working on a software package where anyone can start their own CAN site, their own wiki-style referendum. So if you're in China, you can run your own CAN site and with your own theme. And and it's this idea. I mean, we got to give people the vote. And because, you know, it's been said, you know, quote, they have the money, but we have the numbers. We have the people. And I think that's correct. We have these tools. You know, we each have our own locale. You know, where you are right now, there is soil near you. And there's water.
Well, this raises an interesting question for me, though, that actually came up during the your first segment introducing us to CAN. And that's this idea that, I mean, I'm real clear that the current political structure where, in effect, we give away our power to those who then inevitably, at least some to one degree or another, will misuse or abuse that power. And yet, democracy in a more pure sense has some real fatal flaws, at least in a society as complex as ours, and as it is currently structured, that, you know, it's all most people can do to is get through the day, get through the work week, keep their get groceries and do laundry and get their kids to school and then get on to the next week.
Yeah.
And so to really be fully informed on any single issue, let alone the plethora of issues that affect each of us to one degree or another each and every day, it's just virtually impossible. So while giving away power has some problems, at the same time, I don't see how we can not do that, at least in the sense of or in terms of shifting, you know, having a representative government where people are going to represent our views or worse, everybody votes whether they know anything about the issue or not, and even with the best of intentions, ignorance can prevail and we can hurt ourselves. So how do we reconcile these kinds of issues in terms of then trying to intervene in some way or take some action to reduce and ultimately eliminate this sort of corporate takeover of the world?
Mm. Yeah.
Maybe you're welcome.
Yeah.
Feel free to treat that as a rhetorical question.
No. I mean, I think it's both philosophical and practical. I think starting philosophically, it begins with a state of mind of caring and allowing others to live the fullest expression of their organic lives. The golden rule, you know, you gotta love your neighbor. That's the mental state. Scott Tipps, the president of the NHF, said it well. He said, codex is a state of mind. Once people grab the right state of mind, then they're in a position to start taking action. And practically, we live in a world filled with cars that need to be recycled, nuclear plants in operation, rivers that are currently being regulated by the Clean Water Act and under CERCLA for very good reasons. They are insanely polluted. And so to practically implement these ideals of our heart, you know, once we get our heart in the right place and our minds in the right place, then we have to recognize that technologies must be retained to do the cleanup work. And so I think practically I would propose a sort of a 10-year plan of phasing out weapons and phasing out these power plants and returning to a more pastoral life, if that's what you want. Or if you do want to live in a city, then you know, it'd be perhaps, you know, stronger regulations on what is permissible to bring into your city and what's permissible to promote or to produce in that city. And I'll tell you, what's sustainable is going to be these organic natural products that, when they decompose, they're not killing people. I mean, that seems so basic, and yet we've gotten so far away from that because we have adopted this doctrine that you can produce and make and thrust into commerce whatever you want, no matter how dangerous it is. And then someone has to sue you later, you know, if your product is harmed. But there's already so many pollutants that are currently in our atmosphere and causing all of these problems in our water supply and in our bodies.
But isn't capitalism contradictory to, as a system itself, contradictory to our own best interest? Because if you're going to put profit first, you're going to be bumping up and inevitably crossing ethical and moral boundaries with regard to pollution and many other ethical and moral boundaries.
Capitalism without law and order is insane. But capitalism with law and order is viable, promotes freedom, and allows for competition, exploration, diversity among people. Versus the alternative would be communism or socialism.
Well,
and I think both both are valid.
There are a number of theories about alternative systems, and that's beyond the scope of our show today, and of course the time remaining. But I would submit that there are systems, at least in theory, that look more plausible to me than capitalism. But I guess my concern for the point is that I think capitalism inherently, it has an inherent flaw in that it necessarily pushes us up against ethical moral boundaries. And in doing that, in other words, once you are competing the best you can without crossing moral and ethical boundaries, the only way to further compete in some instances may be, or at least some may at least see themselves as having no other alternative but to cross those boundaries, and they may not even do so with full conscious intent. It may even be unwitting or inadvertent to one degree or another, although at this point I'm convinced that it's happening deliberately in many instances. But I think you hit a really wonderful key point that I just like to expound on just briefly, and that is when you refer to state of mind. I mean, some would even go so far as to say, or I'll put it in my own terms, I have thought or said in the past that I think if human beings were, let's say, fully healthy and functional, I mean, I think dysfunction, using the word sort of loosely, is something that all of us have to one style or degree, but the older I've gotten, the more I've been concerned and seen that we have dysfunction at individually and at many levels throughout our society, and it's quite disturbing, or has become increasingly disturbing to me. I feel that if we could heal the dysfunction, or maybe it involves some sort of evolutionary shift forward for us as humans, but whatever it is, however you want to frame it or state it, that if we could address that issue, there's probably many different systems that would all work at least adequately. On the contrary, On the contrary, you could put in the hypothetically perfect system, and if you have a dysfunctional society running it, it's not going to work. And so maybe the system isn't so critical ultimately as it is that we heal ourselves thoroughly, mentally, emotionally, and so forth, so that maybe a simple way of stating that ultimately is what you said, if we get our hearts in the right place, if we align our hearts with our minds.
Alan, how do you get your heart in the right place if you're taking all of those drugs? And besides,
I'm going to turn to you, Debbie, to answer the question, okay, so how do we heal all of this? Because I think homeopathy has the potential to play a huge part in that.
Well, not very many people around the world know enough about energy healing, homeopathy, and all of the other Reiki and the CAM systems. And most everybody probably knows about the power of prayer. But, I mean, that would be the highest power, I guess. Now, Victor has told us on the chat here that there's a bigger problem with GMO's control. GMO and GE pollens are added to the chemtrail mix, and imagine the destruction in nature that they are achieving by what they're doing today. We've already got a lot of mutations. We've got a lot of loss of species that could have been healing herbs and plants, and who knows what about the animals and what's happening to them. There are so many different things. Victor has given us the list, a URL, truthinlabelingcoalition.org. So you can take a look at that. That's on the chat. And there's just a lot of things going on in the world that turning the tables back by putting our hearts in the right place, that's very simplistic. We only have probably... Let's see, 5 minutes or 6 minutes left to answer that question.
Yeah, it can sometimes take as many as 2 radio shows to solve the world's problems. So, we'll have Greg back, of course, next month and finish that right up for you, Debbie.
Well, I have a – totally. I have a response to the problem that these chemtrails include – GMOs, which is that it's not what goes into us that defiles us. It's what comes out of us. And that, of course, is a quote from the Messiah of the Bible. And I feel that that is correct. And that, it doesn't matter. When your prison guard beats you, are you really losing something? It's sort of this idea that we are greater than just what we do and the effects of this world, that we're building something, that there's a concept behind this matter. And we all know this, because whenever we do things in the world, it makes our mind think, and we come up with all sorts of concepts. Like justice itself, of course, is a great concept. And so because we recognize and see with our minds these concepts, we know that what goes into us is not defiling us. It's what comes out of us. It's that we are greater than this physical thing happening to us. And so when they're pumping these chemtrails on you, just continually just return back, the best that you can. And so it begins individually. And if it turns out that it ends individually as well, then that's okay. So much of holistic living and of the natural approach to medicine and life and family and all of that involves accepting your state of being, accepting your present state of being, and just trying to be the best person that you can be, and returning good for evil. And if we could do that, my gosh, that one example can change the hearts and minds of so many. And it's hard, it's very hard to find the ideal person in the world. So much more often we find the common person. It's that person that I was describing earlier, whose eyes are rubbed in money every day, whose face is pushed into the ground. And it's hard not to respond to that kind of oppression. But transcending that is itself a great test. And it's also been said that, a test is worth more than gold. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
That's what I have to say on that.
Well, this you are getting into considerable amount of philosophy and what happens to the human being. Of course, you're talking about a soul entity which is always alive and within the individual and is striving for good. But if you have something imposing on the external, we are body and soul. We can't separate that. So what happens to the body, and if we're using chemicals and drugs and whatever it is, or inorganic foods that are not we're making ourselves deficient in certain things, that changes the chemical makeup of the human being and even their thinking. So I think you cannot remove the intertwining of those two and just say, okay, say good, do good. If you're being imposed upon and forced in certain ways, that is going to be, as you say, the greatest challenge, the greatest test. But who can come out of that whole and true? You know, you brought up a whole new show.
Yeah, and I think it comes right back to the question of death, because ultimately we are all confronted with that issue at the end of our life, where our body is saying, I'm done. And we're confronted with this question of, did I do something? Is there a concept? Is there a soul? Is there something bigger than me that goes on, or that meant something, even if it's outside of the temporal dimension? And I think that's a smart risk. I think it's a smart risk worth taking. I think that, to the extent that you can live your life as an example by returning good in the face of evil, then you can make an amazing difference. I mean, the greatest examples are the Messiah of the Bible. You know, he overthrew you might say the whole world with just his one example. I would say that. And then, or if you like a secular example, then you have Gandhi. He overthrew the British Empire with peace.
Okay, Alan, do you want to chime in? You have 1 minute to conclude.
I don't know that there's much to follow that with, but...
what are we going to talk about on our next show?
We started on something last show that we were some questions and answers that took us much deeper than we had anticipated, and can follow up on some of those for next week. Questions about rights pertaining to vaccine exemptions and waivers, but Greg, you've given us much, much, much food for thought here on a variety of topics and aspects of the initial topic of Codex, and I certainly want to do some more reflection on all of this, and perhaps we can take some of these points further next time when you're with us, Greg. But as well, we have with Greg the ongoing conversation stemming from topics about his memorandum concerning rights in martial law, declared emergency, and so forth, are right to refuse vaccines or lack thereof, and in what kinds of situations. And as Greg's wonderful memorandum shows, and that is available on the Pandemic Response Project website, that's pandemicresponseproject.com. And if you haven't read Greg's memorandum, I highly recommend it. He spent a tremendous amount of time and clearly some exquisite and exceptional expertise in exploring that issue in depth. And
Yeah, I appreciate that.
Well, I truly believe that. It was, it's the sort of thing that I would ideally love to have the time to go back and reread a few times, because I would get a little more from it each time. But there's many, many places in there for us to explore and expand and expound as well, and I look forward to doing that in our monthly series with you, Greg. Delighted, as always, to have had you here today, and look forward very much to that again next month as well.
I appreciate that.
Okay,
we're
going to sign off. Yeah,
okay.
Thank you both, Greg and Alan.
And you
too,
Debbie.
See you next time.
Thank you for listening to Vaccinations and Your Rights in the U.S. with co-hosts Alan Phillips and Debbie Bruck on Homeopathy World Community Radio. Remember to educate before you vaccinate.
Think of us together like people. allow our souls to shine. Reaching for the grave to love and healing for mankind. Share your light, let your love be unfurled. What I want, we are changing the world. Your truth be unfurled.